It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Man, I am excited. So, most of you guys probably have this device called a phone. In fact, from our analytics, about 80% of you are listening to this show today on your phone. And I appreciate that, by the way. So today's guest is Wesley Laporte, and he has this product called Phone Soap. Phone Soap. And once you hear about what this is, it'll kind of be like a no-brainer to you. And anyway, so I'm excited to talk to him for several reasons. A, his product. B, his business. And C, we can find out about his journey. So this is going to be a great time. As I mentioned earlier, Wesley Laporte is the owner of Phone Soap. It's a Shark Tank product that charges your smartphone as it sanitizes it with UV light. He's from Northern California, but he's lived in Utah for the last 10 years. He was studying pre-med at Brigham Young University when he started the company. Wesley Laporte, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
All right, so I got to ask you, here you are, you're in pre-med, and I mean, how did this come about? I mean, this is, it's kind of not necessarily like a weird departure from medicine. I guess it can be aligned with medicine because you're dealing with germs, but
right.
At the same time, it's not like a no-brainer. Now, if you would have come up with a medical device, then people would have said, oh yeah, that makes sense. Pre-med, medical. But so how did this happen? Talk about this.
Right. Well, so where we ended up now is kind of full circle, but where we started was at the time I was doing cancer research. And so I was working on a paper that actually published in 2011, about the same time that we started the company. I was doing cancer research in a laboratory, and my cousin and co-founder, Dan Barnes, he told me about this article that he read that said that the average cell phone was 18 times dirtier than a public restroom. And I thought that, you know what, there's no way that phones are that dirty. And this was back, like, the iPhone came out in 2007. This was 3 or 4 years after that. It wasn't what it was now. So it was just still, you know, back then we didn't even use our phones as much as we use them now. And
right.
And so that's a pretty interesting statistic. And so, having worked in the lab, I went around and I got some of my gear and I tried to find a dirtier surface than my phone. So I swabbed toilets and shoes and every dirty place you could think of, and then my phone. And it turned out that my phone was the dirtiest thing that I could even find, and it was shocking. That happened, and actually, if you go to our website, you'll see some of these cultures that were done, and the dirty phone culture is actually my phone. So it was pretty upsetting, but more than that, we thought, you know, this is a growing problem. Literally, it's a
right.
growing problem that needs a good solution. So actually, at the time, we started working on a really good chemical cleaner for your phone, but we realized that phones, when they ship, they come with this nice oleophobic coating on the screen. So you'll notice when you get your phone at first, it's like really smooth and nice and your fingerprints don't stick, you know?
Right.
But over time that wears off and your fingerprints start to stick and your phone gets smudgy. And if you put a chemical cleaner on your screen, it actually strips that coating and kind of makes a new phone get real dirty real fast. So we moved away from chemical cleaners, and in the laboratory where we use these huge ultraviolet lights to sanitize the surfaces that we work on. And so that was kind of the light bulb moment where we literally a light bulb and said, you know what, this is the best way to clean the phone because there's no liquid, there's no chemicals, there's no heat. It's just a wavelength of light that penetrates the cell wall of the bacteria, and when it hits the DNA, it really messes it up. And that's how it kills the bacteria. So we took that technology, UV light technology, same thing used in laboratories and hospitals, and we shrunk it down. And we put it into this device, and we married it to a charger, a cell phone charger, because people already have – that's the only time you're not using your phone. And people are – you already have a habit at some point in the day, usually once a day, of charging your phone. So
right.
we designed a product that made it so that you don't even really have to remember to clean your phone ever. You just have to remember to plug it in, which we all do. So – That was kind of where Phone Soap was born. It was born in a laboratory in 2010, 2011, and since then we've come up with several products, but that's the main product, which is our a cell phone charger that cleans your phone, so you don't have to remember to do it.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it still is hard to believe, Wesley, that my phone is dirtier than, you know, than a toilet, because, you know, first of all, I mean, I could see some cross-contamination because we all bring our phones into the bathroom. If, you know, you walk in a men's urinal and guys are relieving themselves while doing something on their phone, you know, it's happening in both male and female stalls. In fact, to me, it's one of the best thing. You know, it's one of the best things you can do in that circumstance, right? You have nothing. You're limited with both time and things to do. So why not, you know, respond some messages, get some stuff done.
Yep.
But when I think of a toilet, I'm thinking about my butt cheeks on this, you know, on this toilet. I'm thinking, you know, of all the junk that goes through there. There's just no way. I mean, how does my phone get so dirty?
Exactly. Yeah, it really is a shocking statistic. And, you know, since we started, there's been a more recent study that, you know, kind of after everybody, just like you said, we have this habit now of using our phones on the toilet. Everybody, you know, raise a hand, who does that? And it's like everyone,
right.
Those who didn't raise their hand are liars. And and so, you know, they don't want to say, but it's true. It's true.
Right,
and
right.
So we, the statistics is one in six cell phones was found with fecal matter. So where does that fecal matter come from? It gets on your phone somehow. And there's
right.
lots of different ways, but if you step back and think about what our phones have become, like 10 years ago, this was just getting started. It's a very different landscape now than it was 10 years ago. We literally take our phones everywhere with us, and we everything our hands touch, our phones touch. We have a pretty good idea that, you know, when we do something dirty with our hands, when we shake someone else's hands, touch a hand railing that's dirty, or in a public place for a long period, or at least before we eat, we have a pretty good habit of going to wash our hands, because we know that that's how our food gets contaminated by, that's how we get sick from our hands touching our face, which we do a lot. And so, you know, most of us have pretty good hand hygiene because we know that's necessary to keep ourselves healthy from getting that, you know, that cold or that flu bug. But what we don't realize is that in between all of our hand washing activities, we are touching our phones a million times. And we touch our phones before and after all these dirty activities. And the bacteria that are on our hand get transferred to our phone. And they don't just live there. They actually, you know, end up breeding there because we keep our phones in tight, warm places. Like pockets and purses, they're either charging up or they're charging down. So they're always warm. They literally have become petri dishes for germs that we are touching constantly. So, you know, we all have a good hand hygiene, but that kind of gets erased in some instances. If you're you know, chomping on a burger and you're checking your text messages in between every bite, then you're just pouring on bacteria onto your burger that's eventually ending up in your mouth. And your immune system has to deal with that, and that's okay. and our immune systems are good at dealing with germs. We don't want to eliminate all germs. That wouldn't even be good for us. But the cell phone is an interesting new vector that didn't exist 10 years ago, because it's not just another normal dirty place that we interact with every day. It's the dirtiest place. It's a super concentration of germs and bacteria that we really are better off with eliminating that as a vector. And putting it in phone soap once a day, you know, a couple times a week reduces the chance of you getting an illness transmitted through your phone dramatically.
Yeah, that's incredible. And, you know, this thing that you're talking about, this fecal matter, you know, one of the things I do know about this is I know they did another study, and they found that 100% of all the toothbrushes that they, you know, checked on or whatever the correct, all of our toothbrushes have fecal matter in them. Why? Because they're in the bathroom. It makes sense. And interestingly enough, not to be a complete nerd, but Big Bang Theory, Sheldon has a UV light in his bathroom specifically for his toothbrush. So right there, there's a new market for your phone soap technology toothbrush soap.
There we go. That's a good idea. We do need toothbrush soap. It's kind of the same. The reason why I have fecal matter on it is because you flush the toilet, and that is an explosive activity for germs, because you've got, obviously, you know what's in the toilet, and when you flush it, there's a vortex that's created, and it spews microscopic biomatter everywhere, including toothbrushes. And you think, you go into a public restroom, and you know, your phone, people to the left and right of you are flushing the toilet, and it's a place that needs, there's a sink in the bathroom for a reason, right?
Right.
Because you're supposed to wash your hands, keep them clean. And so I always say that, people sometimes ask me, well, how long does it take until my phone gets dirty again after I clean it? And my answer is, that depends. And it depends in the same way as your hands. How long does it take your hands to get dirty after? How long does it take your teeth to get dirty before you want to brush them again? And it's not about eliminating all of the bacteria all the time. It's not about being a germaphobe. You know, a certain level of bacteria is good for you, and your body can handle it, and that's good and the way it should be. But as human beings, we've created a couple different vectors for germs that are above the average, above what's considered a normal amount to deal with, and those are the things that we should take care of. So we should wash our hands, we should brush our teeth. And so I say, you know, phone soap is for people that brush their teeth and wash their hands. If you do those things, then, you know, you might as well clean your phone, especially if it's just while it charges and you don't even have to remember to do it.
Yeah, and what's interesting here is, you know, your body adapts to the germs that you constantly give it, right? And just like you can contaminate me, or I can contaminate you with a new germ that maybe our body isn't used to, all of a sudden you get sick and you're wondering why. Cross contaminate ourselves like that. We see this happen all the time. You know, it is an amazing, it's just an amazing thing. So let's talk about this. You obviously got on Shark Tank, and so let's talk about your Shark Tank experience a little bit. If I'm not mistaken, Mark Cuban is, I guess, your partner in this deal?
So if you want, so it's actually Lori Grenier. If you watch,
oh, Lori, okay.
The episode kind of is, yeah, it was kind of at the end. It was Lori versus Mark, right? And they,
okay,
they had two different philosophies. It came down to, they both really liked the idea. Mark was very much wanted to sell these devices into medical facilities. And we actually had that goal and had been developing a product specifically for hospitals to clean up their mobile devices, just like consumers, just a more industrial-grade version of it. And Lori wanted to kind of do both, right? Mark wasn't really keen on the consumer side as much as he was on the medical. And Lori came in last of all and said, you know what? You've got a great consumer business here. A lot of people like this product. Let's keep selling that. And then while that's selling, continue to develop your medical device and then go to market with that. So kind of a best of both worlds. And so we ended up going with Lori because of that. She, you know, we had a similar shared vision. And she's been a really great partner. We've been working with her for several years. And Dan, who's my cousin and co-founder, he goes on air every month with Lori on QVC, and they sell, you know, about, they're on air for shows that last about, you know, 8 to 15 minutes, and they sell about 1,500 units a minute when they're on air. So
wow.
They sell quite a few of these, yeah, quite a few, just through QVC, and obviously we sell a lot on our website and on Amazon, but it's just such an easy product to use, and you know, anyone who's charged their phone can easily see themselves using this unit, and it doesn't take much more effort than just plugging in your phone and going to bed. And so it's really
easy. I love it.
It's been really really popular, and Lori's helped a lot, and Shark Tank's helped a lot with getting our brand out there and getting that exposure.
Sure, sure. Okay, so let's talk about this. Okay. So you and your partner, Dan, right, are sitting around. You do mm-hmm. say, hey, this iPhone, phone soap is the real deal. Let's build that. So from the time that you had this phone soap idea to the time that you – I'm assuming you quit med school, right?
Right. So we kind of made a So I finished up my my research, published and passed it on, and we both graduated from college, and so we decided that we wanted to try to do it. And Dan, after he graduated, went to work for Zappos.com, doing digital marketing,
right.
and went on to, after that, work with American Eagle Outfitters Corporate through their digital marketing. And during those 2.5-3 years between 2010 and 2013, I kind of, you know, I had an engineering background, and we started making this, right?
Right.
Several visits to China later, trying to understand manufacturing and, you know, trying to get the cost right and really learning how to, you know, run a business by asking everybody in the area who'd done anything similar to what I was trying to do, what they thought I should do. It basically took us 3.5-4 years to get is to go from product idea to selling our first unit. And that was in late 2013, early 2014. And since then we've been selling great, but the ramp up took a while because neither of us had experience. And, you know, we were really lucky with having that kind of roadway. A lot of companies don't, you know, have that time to spend kind of learning the ropes before the competition kicks in the space. We were just lucky in this space that it's a unique space, it's a niche space, and we were really able to come in a big way, in the right way, and establish a good brand presence. And since then, you know, our product life cycles are, it doesn't take that long to go to market with new products. It takes us 6 months, which is pretty average. But at the beginning, yeah, it took us a while, and it was a lot of hard work and scratching our heads and not knowing what was going on.
Yeah. So, but that to me is your classic entrepreneur, right? I mean, you come up with this great idea, and it's classic also in the sense that you guys have this technical background, engineer, med, and so you have this core strength, but like a lot of entrepreneurs, it's how do we get this to market? How do we monetize this great idea? So to me, that was, your typical, entrepreneur, right? Great idea or great product. Now what? And so here it is. It took you whatever, 3 years, 4 years to get it, to finally get that first unit developed. And so what year was that when you first hit the market?
That was the 2013-2014 holiday. Yep.
Okay.
End of 2013-2014.
Okay, so let's look at 2014. Do you remember what your sales were for that first year?
Well, they were just a couple hundred thousand, and we weren't even profitable yet. We had sold basically 10,000 units that first year. And for us, that was, super successful, that people were buying our product at all. And they started selling fast enough that I for better or for worse, I convinced Dan to, quit his job and come work with me full-time again at Phone Soap. And really, us working together has been what we've been able to grow it pretty well together. He has a lot of expertise in digital marketing. So we're able to, target very specifically on the internet the people that would be interested in our product and, tell them about this great idea. That's really gone a long way. The internet's really good for targeting people more so than, TV advertisements, but everyone's on Facebook these days and Instagram, and that works really well. So,
sure.
That's where we started, and where we're at today is, we're a profitable company. We've sold close to 1 million units, and we're off to the races with new products, including a medical device that we'll release later this year. That's an industrial grade version of what we sell to consumers, specifically built for hospitals. It's a really awesome device. It's a smart device. It tracks for the hospitals what devices were cleaned and when, so they can have a good log and, of what's being cleaned and what's not. And that's really helpful to hospitals, because for us at home, we're worried about, not getting that extra cold every year, not getting the flu this year. But in hospitals, with people with downregulated immune systems, when they catch a bug in a hospital from somebody else, for some of those patients, it's a matter of life and death. So, it's really important to us to move into the medical space. It's a problem outside of the hospital, but it's a problem inside the hospital in the same way. And you'd be surprised. And so that's why, that's kind of our motivator, is to help people live happy and healthy lives. And this is just one small way of doing that. There's lots of, important factors to a happy and healthy life. But this is, that's our goal, is that, save you and I from getting the flu this year. And, honestly, to save someone's life in a hospital that is getting that might have gotten a bug from somebody else that they just can't get.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So let me see let's recap this a little bit. Cause this is kind of a cool journey story here. So here's Dan, who's got, who's obviously working was it Zappos or whoever. But Dan's got a job, and right now you've sold, a bunch of units, but you're not making profit yet. And you tap your buddy Dan and say, "Hey, come join me. We're not making money yet, but someday we will." And he says, "Yeah, why not, right?"
Yeah.
He saw the vision.
I mean, you got to know about – yeah. Yeah, he did. And we've kind of – I mean, we're cousins, but we also grew up together. And so I remember in high school we – we didn't work at the Dairy Queen during the summer, but we – you know, did businesses together. We washed windows, painted curbs, and very much entrepreneurs, you know, growing up, not because we wanted to be, but just because that was what was fun for us. And we've always enjoyed working together, and, you know, and that's kind of the dynamic we've always had. So fast forward several years after high school and after college to Phone Soap, it wasn't as, he made a sacrifice and he made a jump, and, you know, he went from making money to making no money. But that's part of like, that's part of what we like to do, you know, and
right,
part of the
rest
of life, and try, and being able to create something and have people, enjoy it and like it and buy it and have it enhance their life. That's a super rewarding thing. And you can't put a price on that. And obviously we've been able to, be more successful now, and hopefully that can continue in the future. And we're really grateful for that, because we get to work together and make great products together and kind of, you know, live our dream while simultaneously helping other people. But yeah, he definitely, you know, jumped ship, and, you know, that's a lot of faith there for him and for his wife. And, you know, I'm glad he did, because we, you know, us working together has been a good thing, and he's been great at marketing it. And, you know, I've enjoyed making some new products that work really well for him to market. So it's been a good synergy.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And you know what? This is important too, because as you said, this guy is not only your cousin, but, you know, you guys obviously have a very close relationship. And sometimes this is so important. We can do a lot of the stuff by ourselves. You probably could have done this by yourself, but having Dan, who is, I guess, your cousin in life, but your bro in business, right? Having this buddy of yours really helps a lot. I mean, you guys probably really started going bigger and faster because you have that synergy. It's somebody that you trust, somebody that has your back, and this is important. And sometimes we miss that. We don't want to give away equity. We don't, you know, we want it all. But in order to have it all, that itself comes at a big price.
Right. And we've had that conversation before, actually. And honestly, if I had a crystal ball and I could have foreseen that, you know what, we would have been as successful as we are now if I had just done it by myself and kept all of it to myself, I wouldn't have chosen to do that. I would have always chosen to split it with him, to work with him, because, you know, there's more to life than money, and we've enjoyed what we've done together. And I think that when you do something good that you enjoy, that you're passionate about, that's beneficial to the community around you, that, you know, the money can follow. But but really the exciting thing and what gets us up each day is just you know, working together and working together to provide a benefit to the community around us, something that's really useful and helpful to people. And that's just, you know, you can't put a price on that.
No, you can't. I'm glad you brought that up. Look, one of the reasons as humans that we get married is because we become better. The experience becomes sweeter. You know, you mentioned the zest of life when you have that sharing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you can have the best of both worlds, you have somebody at the office that you have that connection with, and then you go home and you have that connection with your spouse. I think that's a great thing, and not everybody has that luxury. All right, so let's talk about this. So here you are, you're up and running. It's the, what do you call it? The first real year in business. It's 2014. From when did you guys decide, let's give Shark Tank a try? How early or into the process were you guys?
Right. Well, so, that's an interesting story, actually. We, just to paint a picture for you, when we started out, the very first office space we rented was the basement of an insurance company. So it was a small building. There was a small insurance company above us, and we rented out the basement. And I remember when we got our first shipment, I mean, we really didn't know a lot. We ordered 10,000 units, and they came on this 18-wheeler truck, and he kind of pulled up into this, into a parking lot, not to a warehouse, but into a parking lot, and was expecting us to offload these pallets with a forklift, which we didn't have, into a warehouse, which we didn't have. And so he kind of stood there, like incredulous, like, "Are you gonna take these off by hand?" And the answer was, "Yeah, that's exactly what we're gonna do." And so I felt bad for him because I didn't know and he didn't know, but we had to offload all 10,000 of those by hand, bring them down into a basement. And those are just funny pictures. We literally have these tiny little desks and right behind us, and like, you know, almost bursting at the seams, just boxes of foam soaps everywhere you could put them, under our feet, all around us, just towering around us. And it was just a funny situation. And we were able to, ship them all out pretty quick. And unfortunate that a lot of people wanted to buy them. But that was just that was where we were at when we were first approached by we were actually approached by Shark Tank. We didn't submit an application, and we thought, you know what, we just aren't ready yet. And so the first time they approached us, we actually turned them down and said, you know, maybe next year, because we're just, I don't think that'd be good for us. So that was a tough decision, because obviously we knew about Shark Tank and how helpful it was, but we're like, you know what, we're not going to get be able to show, you know, all the traction we know that there is. We're not going to be able to present ourselves in the best way at this point. So if we're going to do it, then hopefully we get another shot at it next year. But right now, it's just not the time. So
all right, so let's stop there a sec. This is an important lesson. Because I want to clarify this for everybody listening. Here, here is Shark Tank. They actually approached you, which is a big deal, because it's usually the other way around. And you guys decided, right, let's walk before we run, kind of a thing. Because you're right. If you would have gone on Shark Tank and everybody would have jumped all over your website, it could have backfired. I'm taking away from your story there is that you decided let's not go faster, than we had strength to run, right?
Right, and it was our first year, and we. That's exactly right. We decided that, we're not profitable yet, but, if our model stays true, then we can be, by next year. And, we're running the company super lean and the way we wanted to. And we just kind of had to put the company through its paces for a little bit longer before we really were proud to show it to, and before we could really convincingly show all those sharks. I mean, they've been in business a long time, and they know what's up. They really do. And
yeah.
So if we're going to go try to hold our own against those guys and really make a good case for what we were trying to do, we had to be in the right place. So that was a hard choice, because, sending them away means that, maybe they never come back. So we were lucky that we were an interesting enough company to them that the next year they said, okay, let's do this. And we said, okay, let's do this. And we filmed on Shark Tank. When we aired in 2015, we actually filmed it the year before. So we had filmed that episode a good year before it actually, probably not a full year, probably like 8 months before it aired. So we had to wait quite a bit of time before it was shot and before anybody actually saw it.
Gotcha. So, let's talk about this. So at this point, Lori had been your partner, I guess, a year or so, or roughly a year before the show actually aired.
Yep. Mhm.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Well.
So,
Go
ahead.
That's basically it. There's after the show ends. I mean, you make a handshake, and then there's there's a bunch of due diligence, and the lawyers have to talk to each other. And before any deal goes down, especially an investment deal, there's a lot of, paperwork and due diligence and checking to make sure everything's right and feels right. So that happened for a couple months. That started immediately after the show ended. They literally, the lawyers came into our trailer, and it started then. But it took a couple months before we actually inked the deal and started working together. So,
kind of
a long time between when it shot and when it aired, but less time.
In one sense, it's a long time, but in one sense, it's not too bad if it was only a couple of months. So, all right. So when you say the lawyers,
yep.
Are these Lori's lawyers, Shark Tank's lawyers? Who are? Because you said that they started talking to you like right after the episode in your trailer. So, which lawyers are there?
Right. So, both the show and her personal team. So you
okay
before you even air, you send all your paperwork to to ABC, and they check it and make sure it's all good. And then when you come to the show, in case you do a deal, you come with even more paperwork. Because if you make a deal, then it's a different set of paperwork that you bring. And
yeah.
So we brought that. So as soon as the deal was done, then, they came to collect the paperwork. We walked them through it. They walked us through what else they need to see and, worked on timelines. And everybody had a little powwow, got their assignments, and then, went after it. So it was a pretty well-oiled, efficient machine over there. They do a good job at Shark Tank. I mean, they go through a lot of companies. They see a lot of companies, and they've got to be organized about it, and they've got to, have a methodology that's, a way of doing things that keeps the efficiency high.
Sure, sure. And just for those who are thinking about jumping in and going after the Shark Tank, I've taken a couple of clients to Shark Tank. We have not had the pleasure of being contacted by Shark Tank. But my experience so far is we have gone to the cattle call, right, where everybody and their dog waits in line. And they do a good job there. I mean, we were in and out within a couple of hours. So they have it down. They do a tremendous job of getting everybody in and out in a very, quick fashion.
Yep.
It's amazing how, but of course that comes with, knowing what you're doing, right? You have to, after you've done a few of those, you kind of know what's going on. And so, and then I think one of my clients, we just got a call back from them, and so it's been a long process. I mean, it's not
right.
A very quick process. We have not finalized that call back, but we'll see what happens there. But anyway, so it just takes time, and it's not something that.
Yes.
If you think Shark Tank's going to save you, and they might, but it could be a year or two before it actually happens. There, we met one person
right.
there in line. This was their third or fourth audition for Shark Tank. They hadn't made it yet. So,
right.
What kind of advice do you give to what advice would you give to somebody who's going to appear on Shark Tank? They've gotten through all the paperwork. They got the green light. They're going to show up and they're going to pitch the sharks. What advice would you give them?
Right. Well, so we actually went through the same process and submitted the same paperwork as everybody else in the same introduction video. The only difference is that they
okay.
called us up and said you should submit. And so
gotcha.
And so we did, and so we did our video, and we're like, what should we do? And we decided to just be ourselves. And so, it wasn't super scripted. And, at the end of the video, we had a little dance party, on camera in the office and, tried to show them as best we could, what our personalities were like and who we were. And, you know, talk to the cameras. We would talk to each other and those type of things. So it wasn't, you know, normally it definitely wasn't a very, you know, we're running a business, but it wasn't a business presentation that we were showing them. We were showing them ourselves, who we were, what we were trying to do, and we kind of let the numbers be the business part of our submission and legitimize that end of it. And the video was really just to show who we were. And so we never been to a casting call, but we just submitted a video. But I assume that it's a similar thing. If you're going to be up in front of that panel that they send out, that, you know, what they really want to see is just who you are as a person and hear your story. And that's your opportunity to be as authentically you as possible. And I think that's, at the end of the day, at least what that panel is looking for. And what the sharks are looking for is, you know, someone who's good to work with, but also the numbers. So that's when the business kind of gets real, is when you're dealing with the sharks. But when you're just trying to apply for the show, I think that the best thing that someone can do is just, you know, authentically be themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so be yourself, and that's always a great strategy. You know, one of the things that I want to impress on everybody listening today, this is not this next section is not only good for Shark Tank, but it's good for business in general, and that is know your numbers. During that cattle call, you know, you're not really asked about your numbers very much, but if you watch Shark Tank, two things that I have noticed, and I want to get your feedback here on this, Wesley, is Shark Tank, the investors, all investors, but you can watch Shark Tank, all investors hate when you don't know your numbers. You have to know your numbers. Mm-hmm. You have to know how much a click is costing you. What's it cost you to acquire a customer? What's the lifetime value of that customer? All of these numbers are important. And then the other thing that I've seen a lot of people screw up is they're not clear about what they do, how they do it, how they help people, and how they're going to, you know, grow market share. You have to be clear, and you have to know your numbers. Anything else that I'm missing there? What do you think?
Well, yeah, you definitely have to know your numbers. And the reason why I think that's important to them is because all these numbers that they ask for in these different metrics, like how much does it cost you to acquire a new customer? And a lot of times when we start a business, we just start selling, and we're like, this is great. People are buying and things are going good. But if we're not careful, we make a lot of assumptions about why people are buying or how they're finding the product that just might not be true. And in business, you're making so many decisions every day. And really, the only decisions that you make, there's a gut feel to it. I mean, you gotta
right.
follow your gut, definitely. But when you're making the business decisions, the best business decisions are made on good data, sufficient data, statistically significant data that is kind of, you know, as assumption free as possible. But when you do make assumptions that they're you know, have a high degree of accuracy. So when they're asking you about the numbers, it's because they're trying to see it. Is this person making business decisions just, you know, willy-nilly based on, you know, how they felt when they woke up this morning? Or are they keeping track and paying attention to the reason, you know, this person has a business that's working, obviously, but are they paying attention to
right.
the real reasons why it's working? And if they're not, then I would assume that their confidence that future success, especially after they've invested, is going to be sustainable if they're not paying attention to the right metric. So it's not just, you know, knowing those numbers. It's also knowing why they're important and, you know, wanting to know them. Because if you're not wanting to know them, if you're caught in a situation with them where it's like, oh man, I don't know that. You know, you really should know those metrics that they ask, because those are the ones that are hopefully helping you make good business decisions. And if you don't know that off the top of your head, you probably aren't spending as much time in the numbers and the data as you should to be making good decisions.
Right, Right. You're that's a nice way of saying you're screwing up. You really have to,
yeah,
right?
Well,
I mean, you really have to know.
They're not so nice.
Yeah,
they'll tell you that on TV.
Right. And you know what? And they'll kick you out, and they'll gut you like a fish. I mean, it gets brutal. I've seen them go off on people. And I like what you said there. Make sure that whatever assumptions you have are based on logic, based on real numbers. Hey, based on the fact that we've acquired 1,000 customers for $10 a customer, we think that we can continue that moving forward. That's completely logical. Saying that, hey, we're gonna,
yes,
you know, we can acquire a customer for $10 and you haven't done it, that's bad. So you have to know that stuff
right
inside and out. All right, so let's talk about this real quick. If you were going to do anything different as a startup, what would you change, if anything at all?
Right. So, having never been, this has been our first rodeo, basically. And we've made plenty of mistakes and, you know, wasted money in things that we shouldn't have wasted money in. And so if I had to do it all over again, you know, for a lot of times we see, you know, big companies brand themselves and do branding activities where they're sponsoring an event or they do, you know, a big ad in a big public location. And that seems, we look at that and we think, you know what, that's, you know, that's a lot of exposure. That's a lot of eyeballs on that. And so you're tempted to spend money into kind of more, I call it more traditional forms of advertising, which is my, you know, non-digital. And when I say that, you know, we tried a lot of experimentation into basically advertising that is difficult to track a return on investment. And I think that we spent more money into that than we should have. And if I had to do it again, I would spend all of my advertising money into places where you can track it. And that doesn't mean not engaging in traditional forms of marketing, but if you're going to do an advertisement, then, you know, have a discount code on there that can track what kind of results you're getting from, you know, people who saw that, just so that you make sure that you're not spinning your wheels and you're not spending your money on things that aren't worthwhile. And it goes back to that data. If you don't have good data about where your customers are coming from and why they're coming to you, then it makes it really difficult to make good decisions. And so in forms of marketing and advertising where you can really track how effective that spend was, I feel like that's where, at least for someone starting a business, you know, and trying to grow it up, that you start there and you really focus on advertising activities where you can, as accurately as possible, track an ROI and spend into advertising that is giving you a positive ROI.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I like to refer that to direct response marketing. You know, a coupon code is a great idea. Everything in your marketing must be trackable. If you don't know how to track it, and sort of lead into that is, if you know, there's two types of advertising. There's the brand or image oriented advertising. Example of that is Coke is the real thing versus direct response type marketing, like you're talking about, something that's really trackable. Buy 3 cases of Coke for $10. And, you know,
right,
one's asking for a direct response, or maybe it's, hey, opt in here to get the free, you know, book or, you know, whatever that is. It's something that allows you to gauge, hey, we got this result and it cost us X amount of dollars. And now you can, you know, use that to better your sales or better the company, as opposed to saying, hey, I spent $1,000 on this image oriented ad and I don't know what it did for us. And so right. if you don't know what your advertising is doing for you, then by all means, stop and get some help because it's the quickest way to grow a company and it's the quickest way to kill a company too. So I like that. You know, Wesley, I have to ask you this. When you came across the phone soap idea, do you believe that it was inspired, a little inspiration there from heaven above or whatever? Because it just seems like one of those things that clicked, right? Here you are, and kind of everything kind of aligned itself, and you could have not paid attention to it. You could have said, hey, I'm just going to continue down this road of med school. So do you feel that it was somewhat inspired?
Yeah, you know, we really do. It's everybody has, you know, their role to play, you know, big or small. And some people might look at what we do and think that it's not even important. And for other people, you know, it really is. And I remember getting a letter, just a letter in the mail, just not even an email, but a physical letter that from a mother who bought several of our products because her young son has a compromised immune system, and it's really the majority of her day is spent making sure that he has an environment to live in that's germ-free, because he really can't, he doesn't have a body that can deal with that. And how grateful she was to us for you know, making it so that her son could communicate, you know, use this great communication device that we have, this, which is a cell phone, to, you know, enhance his life in what's a very, you know, normally isolated situation for him. And so, you know, reading that letter and getting that letter there, you know, for at least some people out there, what we do makes a difference. And so we definitely feel like everything did just click. And, you know, there's a good amount of, you know, we try to be conscientious and run our business right and be smart about it. But at the end of the day, there's just a good amount of luck and good fortune and right timing. And that kind of situation comes from, you know, outside of ourselves. And so we definitely feel blessed. We definitely feel lucky. And like this was, at least for these few years of our lives, this is what we were, you know, supposed to contribute, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? I love that. That to me is a great, what do you call it? A great answer, because sometimes we get caught up in doing something that's, you know, mega multi-billion dollars, and phone soap may become a multi-billion dollar company, but if you know, but that should not be the only motivator. I mean, I love that. This, you know, people with a compromised immune system desperately need things like phone soap. It's just you know, absolute for them. It's not a luxury item. It's a necessity. You're changing lives. And so whether your company stays at this size, it will continue to change lives. And, you know, how do you put a price on giving that level of security and safety to a mother and her child?
Exactly. Yeah,
so,
it feels really great. It feels like the right thing.
Right. It feels like the right thing. And, you know, not to become you know, real cheesy or anything like that, but at the bottom of it all, at the end of it all, you know, people are applauded or revered or remembered for their legacy of the people they served and the people they helped and how they interacted with people, and that's ultimately it, right? And so I love what you're doing, Wesley. I want to wish you guys at Phone Soap continued success. And can't wait to bring it back and catch up what you guys are doing with this new product.
Yeah, it was great to be with you and to talk to you. Really enjoyed it and wish you all the best.
Absolutely. Wesley Laporte, phonesoap.com. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
So good stuff there. I love this phone soap idea. And I, one of the things that I appreciate about Wesley Laporte is that, again, you can hear it in his tonality, you know, that very analytical engineer, med student type stuff. He's not like a pitch man, right? And again, I love his attitude. Whether or not Phone Soap becomes this huge mega brand, they're still doing what they can to impact and serve their customers. Now that they're going to be rolling it out or rolling out another product to serve hospitals, they're slowly moving into the point where they will literally help millions and millions of lives. And a lot of them won't even know that they were served by Phone Soap, depending on what's going on at the hospital. And so it's been a great journey. I've learned so much from Wesley Laporte, phonesoap.com. I hope that you guys learned as much as I did. I mean, first of all, did you pick up the nugget on how to market your business versus how not to market your business? The fact that he took 3 or 4 years just to get his product ready. And I really love the story about the 18-wheeler pulling up with 10,000 units and them completely, you know, unprepared. No forklift, nothing. It's just, you know, and only things that entrepreneurs, young, naive entrepreneurs go through, right? And what a great experience. Anyways, always, we appreciate you guys. We appreciate you listening to us and sharing our message. And dude and dudettes, come on. YouTube.com/Burt J. Martinez. YouTube.com/Burt J. Martinez. You know what? I was just up in Las Vegas, and we did some interviews up there. I was able to hang out with Randy Couture, UFC champion, Hollywood movie star Randy. So he's going to be we're going to be putting up his interview shortly. So you want to subscribe if you want to find out what's happening with the Expendables, if you want to find out about Randy Couture. And it's going to be a fantastic time. YouTube.com/Burt J. Martinez. As always, my friends, my Money for Lunch tribe, I don't know. Got to come up with something. My Money for Lunchers, see, that just doesn't make sense. Anyway, my friends, I appreciate you being here, and I want you to remember that you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.